Welcome to the Alamo Airborne Drone Business Podcast, where we talk about all things drones, with humor, knowledge, and a heavy dose of reality.
Welcome back, guys. Been a while.
Hi, Alan.
Hi, Yosh.
What's happening, man?
Well, man, yourself?
Doing great. Thanks.
So, been a while since the last we spoke.
A little too long.
Little way too long. We thought we were going to wait to try and get through some shows. Instead, we went through a bunch of shows, bunch of flights, bunch of learning lessons.
What do you want to talk about today?
Oh, man, I don't even know where we would start today. We can go all the way back to the Energy Drone and Robotics show.
It was fun.
It was interesting. It was good networking.
Yeah. Context. It's a really industry specific show for oil and gas people and other energy centric businesses. Seems like we make more contacts at those shows with other exhibitors and walking around the floor than actually, like, you know, customers.
You know, that's interesting because the NRECA show was, we were there as an exhibitor, in case you guys missed us and didn't come by the booth. You should have, although we didn't really let you know, so not your fault, it'll be ours. But we exhibited there, and that was amazing.
It was quite amazing. Yeah, it was a great show. It was way better than I actually anticipated it to be.
Yeah, that might be a good thing, though. I went in with zero expectation, and I think I may have helped, but it was great. Great. That was great to see everybody out there. For anybody listening that we saw out there, it was nice to meet you. Good to see you.
What was the highlight of the show for you?
The highlight of the show? I mean, for me, it's always being able to speak to everybody from prospective clients to clients and software companies and just see where the market's going and, you know, how we can help and what voids there are for us to fill. So, you know, just the general networking, but having a booth was very different than the normal walk around. It was a great draw. People, you know, walking up to us and asking us a bunch of questions and us being able to spread knowledge around the show, I think was probably my favorite part.
Cool.
How about you?
You know, it was an interesting show. It was all these electrical co-ops from around the world, really. I was surprised to see so many international people there too. Philippines, Hawaii, Costa Rica, people from Alaska.
I mean, you understand Hawaii and Alaska are part of the United States.
Was that a recent thing?
That's been happening for a while now.
Yeah, they're just far. So you have to fly over water to get to
them. Can't
really learn. Anyway.
You're geographically challenged.
Well, you know.
And you're a Canadian, eh?
I'm not apologizing. Sorry. Sorry to all you Canadians out there.
Hey,
he didn't mean it.
I'd give you a Shorzy line, but
yeah,
it's X-rated.
it was a great show. It was all these different co-ops and everybody's got a different need and everybody's in a different place in their sort of professional journey. And it was just interesting to see some of the, you know, some of the smaller co-ops that you would sort of expect to be maybe a little more backwards in a way, were some of the more technologically advanced ones. And some of the bigger ones were just like doing it old school.
Well, you know, I mean, let's talk about that a little bit. You know, doing it old school is obviously, for so many reasons, something that we're trying to prevent, right? Safety reasons, cost effectiveness. You know, there's still people out there using, you know, manual labor and bucket trucks trying to get their inspections done, which is obviously, in our opinion, but definitely not the way to go. It's just not as efficient, not as cost efficient, nor is it as efficient on your collection data. Right, which is what we're doing out there, I guess, to begin with, when we're talking about transmission and distribution lines. And it was also interesting to hear how many in-house drone programs have have failed. And there's so many reasons for that. I guess we can get into if you want to. We have no real agenda on the show other than coming back and saying hello to you guys. So we can really speak about anything we'd like. By the way, just to touch on that, podcast@alamoairborne.com. If you guys have any questions or things you want us to discuss on the show, you can send an email to podcast@alamoairborne.com.
Hey, Alan, did you hear about the drone that looks exactly the same when you turn it around 180 degrees?
No, I haven't, Yosh.
It's a palindrome.
I mean, he's got me giggling. What does that fault me?
Why are you laughing?
Oh.
Get it? Exactly.
There's Yoshi's joke of the podcast. He got it in early. I wasn't even expecting it. You took me by surprise. So
we were talking about drone programs, why they fail. Well, I think people buy, when I say people, businesses or these co-ops in this case, they see these things like they're sold kind of a bill of goods, if you will. Like, oh, but you just buy a drone and you just snap pictures and then you have all your data and then, you know, you can just see what's wrong and then, you know, go from there.
Which in theory is it's great.
It sounds great.
Yeah.
The reality is, A, let's talk about where you're flying. I mean, there's just some remote areas. There's FAA restrictions. There's all kinds of access issues, private property, gates, mountains, snow, weather, et cetera. There's the equipment itself. You've got a drone that sometimes you want to do a thermal analysis. And I would actually recommend doing a thermal analysis because you want to know that there's a hotspot. And so you can do pre-failure, you catch this thing before it starts a fire. So, you know, the equipment that you buy is very important.
And
having a skilled pilot.
I'm gonna interrupt you there and just add to that, right? You're buying this equipment and you think to yourself, okay, great, I'm going to buy this aircraft and I'm going to do my inspections with it. But you're not changing with the times, right? It's a big problem that I was hearing from people. So they put it in their budget to go and buy these aircraft, one or two of them, thinking they're going to do them with their own pilots. And they'll go out and they'll do their inspections for the year. And we'll talk about the timing on that in a few minutes. But what happens when the next camera is out and the next aircraft is out that's streamlining it? It's no longer in your budget, right? So you're now stuck with this one aircraft, which, by the way, another thing nobody thinks about is how often these aircraft actually go down, whether it be from needing maintenance and tons of flights or, you know, hitting, let's call it an unscheduled landing. A lot of those happen. And so when that happens, you're out of commission, but they're buying this
out like a tree.
I've seen it happen. But they're going out and buying these aircraft, not thinking about the fact that, you know, the industry changes so fast and so much that aircraft becomes obsolete faster than your budget wants to allow it to. So there's one issue.
Let's talk about pilots. I mean, you know, our guys are basically compensated by how many structures. Typically,
that's how we're compensated, and we're mission driven. So we like to say that our guys are all constantly mission driven.
We've got a job, got 10,000 distribution poles or something. You know, we're going to go and look at the very last one and try to get to it. When you've got a guy that's getting paid his 40 hours, no matter what, you know, it might take a little longer to do that mission and complete that mission.
Well, from experience and from speaking to all these people, it does. Whereas, you know, with a truck, with a bucket truck and a couple of guys, you know, you're doing, I don't know, 10 to 20 inspections a day. With your own pilot, you know, it's great because you're ramping that up to 50 or 60 a day. You know, our guys are flying between 125 and 250 a day. So, and then they have to process the data collection. So that's an issue with your pilots.
Well, let's just talk about the data itself before processing it. What are you doing with it now? There's a lot of systems out there. People push the pictures, images, thermal data up to these systems that it's another expense to get that processed, right? It's either an external system, and then you want to get it back into your system too. There's a lot of moving parts here is what we're trying to say.
Right. So when you look at it and say, oh, we're just going to pick up a drone and do our own in-house program, it seems so rosy when you're first thinking about it, and then you get into it, and it's a lot more cumbersome than people, you know, think about from the outset, which results in, you know, the failure of their programs usually within a year. Is really what I'm hearing. These people turn around within a year of trying it themselves and realize, you know, you got to know your business, right? I mean, I'm not an accountant. We farm out our accounting, right? That's just the way it is.
I mean, let's, you know, being real though, there's successful drone programs out there. I mean, there's people that are doing it right, and we've met a lot of them. And, you know, we can kind of tell who's doing it right, who's not, especially at these trade shows where they come up, but just by how they
questions they pose.
Yeah. And, you know, the conversations that we have. And we're not, you know, hardcore close trying to close people. We're usually making fun of their shoes or something when they walk into our booth.
That seems to work.
So there are a lot of successful programs out there, and there's guys that know what they're doing. We're not the only experts, although we are experts in this niche, and we happen to know what we're doing. So that helps during these conversations. We don't sell on a scare tactic, but people know that we're known in the industry as the cleanup crew.
Oh, I think it's as they ominous find us. We actually were willing to help. There were quite a few people that I spoke to and helped them choose the drones that they were going to fly, you know, and put into their program. By no means, you know, do we ever turn around and say, "Oh, you can't fly yourself. We'll fly it for you." No, we're not about that. We're definitely about, you know, helping and sharing, especially these smaller co-ops. I love the fact that we met so many ranchers and farmers that were sitting on these co-op boards. To me, helping grow America from the middle out is fantastic, which is probably the same reason we like to hire a lot of vets.
Right.
So,
that's a good place to plug our hiring. We are looking for pilots, you know, quality guys that are mission driven. 70% of our workforce are veterans. And we like that. We like the mindset and the mission driven attitude. So if you're out there and you're hearing this, don't be shy. Drop us a line, podcast@alamoairborne.com. Or Yoshi at, or Alan with one L and one N, at Alamo Airborne.
Alan. That's the only way to spell it, gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen.
Not Ellen. Alan.
A-L-A-N. Yes, Yoshi's second joke. You only get one.
I'm sorry.
You only get one.
Excellent segue, by the way, as we're talking about, you know, America and growing America. You know, we built this business on Chinese drones. It's not a secret.
I hate to say it, right, but he's right.
And we like Chinese drones, okay? I think there's a lot of scare tactics that are going on. I don't want to get too political. I mean, we're not about politics in our business, our show, in our lives. You know, we just sort of want the best tool for the job. And far and away, it's DJI. Nobody does it better. And then we're not sponsored by them. We're not, you know, plugging them at all.
They're one of the only companies that haven't sent us a drone to test yet. How about that? We're settled.
Oh, God. We have tested a bunch of Chinese drones. We have yet to find one that really performs the way a DJI performance.
And we're trying, folks. We really are.
I want to believe it. So if you're a drone manufacturer and you hear this podcast,
give us a call.
And you want to impress us. We do a lot of industrial inspections. We have basically three verticals: transmission and distribution, which is, you know, the electrical world, wind turbines and solar, and oil and gas and methane detection. And we are... we fly telecom.
A lot.
I mean, we do. We are in the weeds. We're in the dirt. We're in the desert. We're in the snow. You want to test your drone? And if you think you have a solution for us, we're all ears. We've tried just about everything. We read a lot. We go to a lot of seminars. We do a lot of virtual, you know, meetings with people.
And we fly a lot.
And, you know, we don't want to slam any particular company, but we've had many a drone here that just doesn't do what Autel or DJI does.
I'm going to put DJI in the category of their own. I mean, we're out there, you know, a lot of our pilots, I'm just going to say we are out there on a constant basis in some unforgiving environments, and we're proud of that, and that's what we do. But, you know, knowing that you're going out with the right gear, and for us, the right gear is everything from, you know, right now we're running Starlink, so everything from our Starlink and our trailers, you know, all the way through to our trucks, our clothing, you know, all that gear has got to be right to be able to go out and be efficient and do our jobs and achieve what we want to do and accomplish the missions we want to accomplish. And the biggest tool that we use out there, the most important tool that we use out there, is the drone that we're flying. And
the payload that's on the drone.
Correct. You're right. I was referring to that as a package in general. You're right, though. And to really, you know, to get up in the morning and have almost no doubt that that aircraft is, you know, is going to be flying. Obviously, no matter what you fly, there's always routine maintenance. There's always keeping your gear clean. And, you know, those things are across the board. But all things being equal, to get up in the morning and know that you've charged up your batteries and you're going to fly all day and you're going to get the collections done. And like Yoshi was mentioning before, you know, we are very mission driven. We charge by the asset. So for us, you know, no collections, no money. It's just the way it is. And so to be able to rely on a piece of equipment that is really what's generating your income, and to be able to get up in the morning and take those batteries that have been charged all night and go and fly all day is just, it's paramount. It's imperative to us. And so, you know, DJI has been the most reliable to date for us to be able to do those things. And I mean, I don't see a more important tool in our toolbox than, you know, our drones.
And let's put it this way. If there was an American alternative that could perform the way a DJI does,
all that
integration,
all that,
and even if it was twice the price, we would be all over it. But when we fly DJI, we're profitable. When we fly something that's not a DJI or an Autel,
we have to charge double.
Either charge double or we lose money. Or our guys are sitting around waiting. Or we have a mechanical issue. Or they don't perform in the cold. Or
we're up an hour extra early trying to make sure that even though we put it away, you know, cleaned it and did its maintenance and put it away the night before, we still have to get up earlier and just make sure that that drone is going to operate, you know, when we start flying.
Even little things like we've got one manufacturer that requires us to geotag all of the pictures we took all day long. Even though the pictures are geotagged, we have to process that through. There's like a separate SD card that goes in the drone, collects the RTK, which is real-time kinematic data, which is basically just, you know, precision for the pictures.
We're overlaying basically the information.
Yeah, it just and why can DJI do it and this other company can't? I mean, come on.
I will say though, this other company, and again we'll name no names, has the fastest RTK connection that we use in the field at all. And we're again in the middle of nowhere. There are a lot of RTK.
Yeah.
There are a lot of areas where
there's pros and cons. I mean, they're like, I don't mind naming. No?
I don't think we should.
Okay.
I don't think
they do a good job, and their interface is nice and slick, and you know, it's very gaming like. And you know, we like that aspect of it, and the user interface is nice. But and it actually performs very, very well in the wind at like 45 mph with
I could tell you for a fact,
Colorado and flying some of these structures where it's just going, you know.
Yeah. Wizard bananas.
Yeah.
No, normally you'd clench up your butt cheeks to put any other aircraft up in the area.
So this thing performs, you know, admirably in that. But unfortunately, we get like, you know, a 17-minute flight time when we could get 30 something on a DJI.
We're basically, instead of
half the inspection, the same.
And we're careful with the flight.
Are we done? Are we done bitching?
I don't know for everyone bitching. We're always bitching us.
Let's move on.
Okay.
All right. Now that was a fun discussion. And we'd love to hear your opinions. All of this. Again, I think politics is just playing way too deep in all of this.
I don't want to get involved in politics. Unfortunately, we have to deal with the mandate.
I think the Chinese are.
They're not relying on us right now.
And if you guys had any idea to upload the data at the end of the day, there's no way the Chinese have our data. I'm sorry. I mean, they don't have the high-res pictures that we have. We barely get.
Everything's all over the web. You could pull up just about anything you want. You can see any picture of almost anything in this entire country at any point from a residential laptop.
Yeah, we get on, open source Google Earth, and we can pretty well see everywhere from every angle.
I can see the Alaska pipeline all the way through Canada. That's for sure.
Yeah. So again, this is politics and we don't like it, but it is what it is. Moving on, let's talk about verticals.
Okay.
I happen to love flying.
It's a lot of loves.
Wind turbines.
And now I know why he wants to talk about verticals. And I'm just going to say, get it out of the way right now. There is no better pilot in the country, possibly in the world. I'm being very serious in giving him his compliments here because he deserves them, and I might not do it often, but there is definitely no more badass pilot, definitely in the country.
Could you say my name?
Then Yoshi. There really is none. There's nobody I've seen hold the candle. And
I'm getting a little teary.
It's slim when you're talking about turbines because there's not many inspections that you could do in a day. But, you want to talk about somebody that's going to consistently put down a dozen a day. And I don't let him fly anymore, which he hates. But it's definitely. So now I know why you wanted to bring up wind turbines.
No, that's...
Yes. Here's your medal.
I want to bring it up, although I can't argue it.
Okay.
But the reason I wanted to bring them up is there's a bunch of companies out there trying to automate wind turbine blade inspections.
I'd love it if they had to do it.
It's one thing on the data side, right? You can have AI or, some back office analyst looking at those pictures. That's not the issue. It's the flight itself. And as we know, we've tried with a couple of different companies that claim they can do automated flights. I mean,
Metabound the fields.
Yeah. And they just, I don't know what it is, like telecom, piece of cake, right? There's a bunch of people that can do automated flights.
It's
on a fixed tower.
Stationary.
Yeah. But so is a wind turbine.
No, it's not.
Sort of.
No.
Yaws,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, okay. Well, let's say you set the parameters, right? And this is the last problem. I'm at a company on the field. That's my end there. So you affix the blades, right? You set it. We'll call it the Mercedes symbol, so you guys can all, they're all three blades. So you said it looking like a Mercedes symbol, and that's what shit. And theoretically, this aircraft, you set the parameters and you choose the points and the tips and everything else, and it's supposed to fly the
entire thing. Really?
Where that's the manual part of the flight, right? You have to set all those parameters, right?
At each blade tip.
Correct. You do. Well, for some reason, they want to pick two out of the three, thinking that it can gauge the third one. But here's the biggest issue. The biggest issue is you're flying a wind farm. What do you need to have a wind farm work, right?
Wind?
Wind. And I'm not talking about the stability of the aircraft at this point. I'm talking about the balsa wood blades that are on a wind turbine. And the problem that they were really facing is it's not really a fixed point anymore because those huge turbine blades move in the wind. And I'm not talking about rotating. They literally will flap back and forth in the wind. So you try and set the parameters on this aircraft and say, okay, I want you to fly here or there. And it knows it's got to fly to, let's say, 25 feet off the tip of the turbine. That that blade's moving, it's shaking in the wind. And so the aircraft just freaks out and, you know, says, I can't do it. It'll start the flight.
I don't understand the yaw also, like what the wind direction in other words, is going to dictate what direction the blades are pointing at. Right?
No. No, it'll
adjust that.
You can
stop the blades.
Well, no, it'll dictate where the blades are facing.
Right.
Right. But the blades themselves,
not the yaw,
right?
The blade itself.
So you're talking about
the yaw of the
direction of the entire fan.
Three.
Yeah. Fan. Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. So it'll point the other way.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But the problem is that they're not stable like a telecom tower is, right? That telecom tower could be 100 mile an hour winds. It's not really swaying.
A little bit.
Maybe at 100.
Yeah.
But in general, it's not really swaying.
You're also doing a different ground sampling data on a blade. Like the thing we like, especially in Texas where the sun is bright, those blades get bleached.
The bleeps?
The bleach blade.
The
bleach blade.
Right. They do.
The bleach blade. And you need a very high res camera. And you need to be close so you can see the anomalies, the whatever it is you're looking for, the cracks and the lightning strikes and stuff. On a cell tower, you know, it's a little bit, you're further away.
Yeah, but you're flying, you know.
You're also building, you know, at least in our case, we're building digital twins that are a little more forgiving.
They are more forgiving, but you're flying these... the wind turbine with the same aircraft, let's say, no matter what, right? So if we're inspecting this with a DJI Mistral 300, it's the same payload that's picking up the information. So it shouldn't really matter how bleached they are, right? Because if we could fly it manually, you should be able to fly it automated. The issue is that once that blade starts to move a little bit, and again, most of the software I've seen, the flight will start. It'll get up the first 10 feet of the blade before it decides it's going to freeze and freak out. The problem is, you know, all of that movement, and then all of a sudden the drone stops, says, no, something's wrong. I can't ride it. I can't continue. The parameters are not the same. It's not forgiving. That's the word I want to use. It's not forgiving.
There's companies that claim that they can do it. And
we're
selling jobs.
And we've met some of these companies out in the field.
Well, yeah. But there's others that are closing business, getting these jobs. That works.
You know, I would like... reach on out. Podcast at alanmoreairborne.com, please. Or alan at alanmoreairborne.com. I'd love to automate those flights the same way we can tell it.
Getting those
flights. I mean, you spend enough time flying wind turbine blades and, you know... It's like that snowboarding effect. You go to sleep at night and you still feel like you're snowboarding or skiing. It's the same thing with the wind turbine. You start looking at that in the camera so much that you go to sleep at night and you start seeing the blades that you're flying.
It's really more like the Jimi Hendrix effect. Like I can just fly those with like the controller behind my back or over my head.
And he's showing off again.
You know. No, it's those things are, they require a ton of concentration. You're close to the blade. It's high wind, especially when we're flying with a smaller, like an M3E or something. You know, it's a little scary. You know,
I was very impressed flying with that M3E. I was really,
things are awesome.
Awesome. It really is. And they got it. I was a little worried while we were flying them. I said, you know, I don't know how these collections are going to turn out, but they really.
I mean, the pictures are not as good as the
H-20.
That's what you're sure and fancy your payloads, but it worked.
It did.
You know,
did.
And the customer was thrilled.
We delivered the data.
Yes, we did.
That's what we did.
Yes, we did. And we have a partner that helped us with the data on the back end. And, you know, that's a real important piece of our business, too, is having strong relationships with the people and companies that support what our deliverables are.
We like to call them our strategic partners.
I mean, ideally, we'd love to do everything in-house. Reality is we're awesome pilots, and that's really where we shine. Getting our guys out there, doing the data collection. Data is, I don't want to say it wrong, but it's kind of a necessary evil. Like that is the deliverable, right? The data,
processing the data, doing all the data,
processing
it is. Yeah,
honestly, it's not my favorite thing.
No, it's not. I love to fly, and I love when we have our guys out flying, and I love when we head up to the mountains and we're somewhere in Wyoming and we're watching aircraft do all these collections.
Like, how come I can't go anymore?
You can go. The USO does travel to random bases throughout the world at random times to keep up morale. I feel like it's a waste of your talent out there with us.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, listen, when we had an emergency, we had to get these wind turbines flown out in Wyoming. It was deep into the year. It was pretty much winter a few months ago. We had an emergency. We had to get, was it a dozen turbines or whatever it was flown? Nothing crazy, but we really wanted to deliver for this customer.
We did and, one day.
And yeah, and Yosh and I went out there and knocked it out. And so when we have those emergencies on wind turbines, go fly. I mean, maybe for the next year or so, and then we'll.
Thanks.
But he can't anymore, so live it up. But we'll get you. We got you an Air 3, right? You can play around with that.
I mean, I could take pictures.
Yeah, you can play around. You know,
I think, you know, it has like social media. That you can flip the camera portrait.
It's the most expensive pacifier that we've ever got. Speaking of flying, Yoshi, where are you flying to?
I am a Pacific.
We're opening up a remote office, guys.
Check it out, AlohaAirborne.com.
That's correct.
It'll actually redirect you to AlamoAirborne.com. But we did buy the URL.
Aloha Airborne.
Mad at me because I put a plumeria on the logo, made cards, and got mad at me.
So here we are, a bunch of badass pilots to fly into the middle of nowhere, and we have a little plumeria. Insignia.
Yeah, so I'm going to be working out in the beautiful state of Hawaii. We have a little bit of business out there, and
proud to say we are
in a remote office there.
We are really nationwide at this point. We're actually looking at some flights in Alaska, and if we can get those, we are truly a nationwide company.
It's actually, I discovered this particular project is north of the Arctic Circle.
Yeah, it's gonna be, again,
cool. Can we go in the summer and do some salmon fishing?
For sure we can, and we can take the bear out there with us, and
the bear,
well, they'll probably catch some salmon with his mouth.
One of our pilots,
you'll meet him soon enough, I'm sure. but yeah, if we get into Alaska, we are now truly a nationwide company, I'd be really proud to say. So we're working on that.
Yeah, we're not just contiguous anymore.
Not just the lower 48. It's exciting stuff, guys. It's exciting stuff. And if you want to come and fly in hostile environments, but at the same time see things most people will never see in their lives while flying drones, we're just a step away. We're an email away.
What is that email?
podcast@alamoairborne.com.
Alamo. Born. God, that's right. B-O-R-N-E. Case here, not eccentric. Okay, what else do we have to talk about? This has been fun.
This has been
fun. You know, let's talk about aging equipment.
Okay, that's fair, because I recently got frustrated that some equipment that we spent a good amount of money on and bought a ton of were, again, in operation for no more than a year. And we can't really get much to sell it. So let's talk about aging equipment.
What is it about the Permian Basin that doesn't like drones?
You know, that is a very fair question, because that is one of the more hostile environments we do fly in. I will call it Mars, which is what you feel like when you get out there. It's really, really, really very, it's like being on Mars.
It's hot. It's either super hot, super cold, lawless, nowhere to buy anything. Like, literally, we have to drive 45 minutes.
It's all sins
and get, like,
all winds,
whatever, at the smallest Walmart on the planet.
What
is that town?
God forbid you need Allen wrench size you don't have. You know,
get a flat top. Don't leave your car on the side of it.
It's Mars. That's it. You're out there by yourself in a very hostile environment. It is one of the, we do, most of the places we fly, I would call a hostile environment as far as drones are concerned, because it does you know, it does beat up on the drones, but the Permian is really miserable.
Well, listen, like, I'm going to shout out Carla at Nine Mile Ranch.
Oh, she's fantastic. She made that whole area.
That place is just amazing. It's the middle of the Bureau of Land Management, you know, Native American Land, BLM, the other BLM. And it's and you know, it's really just such a gorgeous spot. Her father settled that ranch. I don't remember the exact story, but
he came out there on horseback.
Yeah. They have no electricity. They're off the grid. They have solar that kind of runs out a couple hours after sunset.
Zero cell phone.
There is a little Wi-Fi. How did we connect?
They had Wi-Fi in the main house,
but it's not solar. So
correct. It only runs 12 hours off.
Yeah. I think it's like, it's not cell. I don't know how they have Wi-Fi. I'm not quite sure. Was it satellite?
Probably satellite.
Anyway, we bring our Starlink out there and that helps a little bit. And they park us away from everybody else because they know.
It's a whole other podcast.
You know, we have some fun cooking.
Well, listen, you're living out in the middle of nowhere in the mountains. You want to be able to cook up some meat, right?
You got to
feed the boys.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, like when we're there, it's also a hostile environment, but it's so much nicer, calmer. There's something about, and don't get me wrong, I love Texas, but the Permian Basin is just, it's harsh. And, you know, you're dried out no matter what time of year, chapped lips, either cold or hot, nothing in between. The trailer destroyed. It was like sandblasted out for a year.
It's like down to, you know, year in a long time.
Yeah. And
what's that movie with that, the Martian? When Matt, what's his name, is stuck up on Mars by himself for a while and has to make everything work. And
if you guys, I think it's called The Martian.
Yeah, but that's what it's like being out in the Permian.
So it's fun. And we, you know, our trailer has those pop outs that, you know, we have to like WD-40 every time we want to do it.
Every WD-40 has gone out the window. It's now a grease gun and a few feet of grease.
Yeah, it's rough. It is super rough on our equipment. Even though we try to use landing pads and stay off the dusty areas, or
it's all dusty area.
You just cannot avoid it.
We go through lenses, movable lenses. We have lenses on there for the standard cameras on the payloads. And you know, there's zoom lenses. And so of course the nature is they move in and out, and it's all done electronically, and those lenses fail so quickly because of the amount of grit that gets inside. And we clean them nightly.
We're lucky if we get 3 months out of
them. Yeah, and we clean them nightly. So.
It's fun.
Well,
yeah, we love what we do. Don't tell our spouses, but we get to play with gadgets all day and at camp at night.
Oh, and really see. Oh, that was 9 miles. So Yoshi was talking about 9 mile in Utah. I don't know how many people will ever get to see that part of the country. I mean, again, you're talking about a place with zero service, zero anything. It's a canyon through the mountains. It's absolutely magnificent. Nobody's there.
Petroglyphs and you know, just amazing little waterfalls and vistas. And then, of course, we're going on the right of ways. We're off of the main road.
Yeah.
We're on these, like, literally dirt roads that are up the side of a mountain. It's amazing. You know, between those, what are they, 250-foot structures, a lot high?
Yeah.
Approximately.
Yeah.
Might be overestimating.
But, they're high.
You know, and they're on top of mountains, going from mountaintop to mountaintop with, you know, a quarter or third of a mile between them of, you know, high voltage wire. That part doesn't sound so scenic, but the vistas and the views up there are just amazing. If you go on our website, you'll see some pictures, some of the stuff.
I mean, it's pretty neat. If you like adventure and you like backcountry and you like gadgets, this is definitely a good business for you.
Yeah.
But you have to be mission driven.
Yeah.
There's no going.
No whiners.
Nope. There's no whiners. No going out there and saying, I can't.
You have no patience. for wipes. Zero. Okay. If you even think about whining, don't call us.
Wrong company.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you can't take a joke, don't call us.
Diyoshi is the head of our HR department.
That's right. Think about that for him. Okay. What else do we have today, Alan? Do we need more drone jokes? I don't really have any.
I think you've done like three jokes. This I think we're way over your quota.
Okay.
That's it.
Let's talk about the industry a little bit. It seems like people are falling off. What's going on?
Well, what's going on?
Again, I don't want to insult anybody or name any names, but some sizable companies that were in the quote-unquote drone services sector.
It's a very touchy subject.
Gone away.
It's a very touchy subject. Are you sure you want to talk about this?
I mean, why not? I think it's, I don't want to, name anybody, but you know, what are they doing wrong? Why are we getting phone calls and working and staying busy and hiring the right guys? And I mean, I know we're blessed and a lot of it is luck, but I think it's like 50% luck and 50% what you do with it.
Well,
maybe those numbers aren't right, but that's really, I believe that it's how you play the cards you're dealt.
Well,
what happened to these big guys that just imploded?
When somebody calls you all and they say they need whatever, it's whether it's, 1,000 transmission structures or 1,000 wells or what, they need something collected and respected. What is your immediate thought, right? What are you going to do with that, right? What's the most important thing when you get that contract? To you, what is the most important thing?
Maybe my guys. Who's gonna do?
No, I'm not talking about logistics. I'm talking about, you have an end client and that end client needs a result.
Oh, they're deliverable.
Right.
What is it that they need? They may be telling me something that I it's like, well, we need to know. Well, so we want to define that deliverable. Right? That's really...
I'm going to go a step further here for you. How do we get that deliverable to them? All right, we're going out and we're flying what they need us to fly, and we're trying to not achieve their expectations. We're trying to beat their expectations and get them that deliverable that they need, right? And more often than not, and in more times than not, it's in areas that are harder to reach, harder to fly, harder to get to, whatever it may be. But our main drive is delivering that information to our client, right? It's not just about getting the contract and saying that we have the contract and billing the money. For us, it's about achieving the mission. And you'll hear us say it all the time. We are mission driven. That's what we do. So I only bring this up because what has become very apparent is that to so many companies in this industry right now, it's about getting the contract and not about delivering the results to the customer. And that has been it's been the largest driving force behind these companies going belly up. So whereas, Yoshi, who is a master salesman, comes in and says, okay, Al, we have X amount to fly for this company. Our immediate thing is getting in gear. How are we going to achieve that? How are we going to deliver it to them? And how are we going to deliver it to them well before their deadline so they have the information that they need? And give us error room, by the way, also, because, not every collection is perfect, obviously. And, so we go out there and if we're collecting, whatever it is, 10,000 distribution poles, there may be 200 of them that need to be reflown. We want to get those reflown and back into their hands with ample time for them to do what they need to do with the information, right? That's how we're built. That was our model and that's our mindset, regardless of anything going on in the industry. That's just who we are. That's how we're built. But what we see a lot is people more focused on getting these contracts and so much less focused on actually delivering on that contract. And I feel like that is one of the driving forces of these companies going out of business. The other is that everybody today wants to be Google, and we can't all be Google. I mean, you just can't, you know, have all of your private jets and all of your movie theaters and playrooms and your 15,000 square foot offices and have everybody playing.
Rather than flying,
you think Adventure World is like screwed up some of these drone services?
I don't know if the Venture World screwed it up as much as these people focused on, you know, again, it goes back to what I said to begin with. They're just focused on the wrong things. They're focused on getting the contract, but not delivering the contract, where we've always been focused on delivering first. Like, that was our, you know, if we're going to get a contract, we're going to deliver on that contract. And that's how we grow. And that's how we establish ourselves in this industry. And that's how we get our name out there, right? I mean, a lot of people call us because at the end of the day, when they can't fulfill a mission or when they have a company that has not fulfilled what they need, we get that 10th hour call saying, hey guys, we need these things flown. And they know we're going to go out there and do that. And I think that's what a lot of companies are missing there.
I think a lot of it too is making the right pivot, making the right move, right? Like, we've pivoted a few times in this business. Like, I think all drone pilots start off by, you know, taking pictures, doing roofs, the real estate. And, you know, and we actually had a cleaning drone, you know, would clean buildings.
A couple. We had a division.
Yeah, we're right. Okay. And, you know, that just wasn't really profitable for us. So we made the right move to sell it to somebody that can make money with it.
Well, let me it's a profitable business for any of you thinking about getting into it. It's definitely a profitable business. It just wasn't for us.
Customs made a pivot. And for us, it was the right, because of how we're built, we made the right move. I think what happens is these venture capitalists or investors come into a drone service company and either A, want to be all things to all people, or they want that particular drone service to expand their offering, et cetera. And they get out of their element. I mean, how many calls have we gotten from
jobs we have to say no to?
Well, jobs we say no to, right?
Yeah.
Forget it. You know, like, I'm not talking about the bottom tier.
No. You just, like, you have to know your strengths. You have to know your weaknesses. And not that it would even be a weakness. I mean, there are flights that we could probably tear apart, but it's just not what we want to focus on. It's not in our wheelhouse.
I'm guilty of taking on jobs that are not necessarily profitable, but I do it because of maybe a potential relationship.
Sure.
And they're stupid jobs. And I, you know what?
He is guilty.
I would say 50% of the time I get screwed. And 50% of the time it works out really, really great.
Which is worth it for us.
Yeah. So, but you know, you have to take those risks and again, you have to be lucky. And then it's what you do with that luck. And I think that's what's wrong with, at least in my opinion, what's going on with some of these.
Yeah, we don't think it is granted.
They're either just so super niche-y that they can't see anything else and they don't try anything else, which is good and bad. I mean, if you have, look, we have, like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, we have three essential silos, you know, three.
Well, let's say four.
Four.
Right? We're in the energy sector, yeah, and we do telecom, right?
Right.
The energy sector is broken up into four different.
Okay. Right. But we diversify and we don't put any more than 30% of our business in any silos on purpose. There's companies out there, naming names, that focus solely on one customer. It's so dangerous. You know, it's so dangerous. Or pilots, independent pilots, that rely on one company to give them all of their leads.
That's another big issue in the industry, by the way, and why people fold it is that, you know, the value that we bring having our own guys that are trained by us in every vertical, and they're constantly being, you know, the training is constantly being updated and monitored by us. And the focus that they have has always got to be 100% in line with our company values. I mean, those things are very important. Whereas a lot of people decide they want to just, they'll throw it out to the lowest bidder of a pilot somewhere in the middle of the country. And, you know, that's how we're going to achieve. And you're not talking about, you know, a real estate photos on a home, right? You're talking about inspecting methane on an oil pad, or, you know, checking transmission and distribution lines. You're talking about heavy infrastructure, and to be, you know, to trust that to somebody who is not mission driven, who's so
not focused on labor.
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
You know,
and the, I think that's the formula that has driven a lot of these people to the wayside.
So we are contract laborers, but we are contract laborers as a company.
Yeah. Talking about individual
rights. Right. So, you know, but we will contract with, you know, there's a company that we do distribution inspections for. That's another drone company.
But they contract us as a company.
Correct.
Not pilot base.
And they contract us because our guys, employees and W-2s.
It's because I'm so good.
I mean, that plays into it. It's not, were you jealous? Because I got a little jealous there.
Just stating fact.
I felt a little. So.
All right, guys, we're not going to bore you too much longer, you know, but thank you for hanging out with us, and we're not gonna let it be so long in between. The next couple, we're actually going to start videoing our recording. We'll throw it up on YouTube in case you guys want to even see what we look like or hang out with us while we broadcast.
That would be cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're going to be in Hawaii.
I promise you I'm going to be wearing my Hawaii shirt. I promise you.
Believe him.
Yeah. I might even put on a pair of pants. Maybe.
Well, I don't believe that, but you're going to be behind a desk, so none of us have to deal with it.
Anyway, thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate you guys listening. We really appreciate everybody that's reached out.
Keep reaching out.
That hurt us, you know, the kudos go a long way. We're not looking for any kind of financial gain out of this podcast. We're strictly looking to share our experiences and to hear from you guys, and the positive reinforcement really helps. Now, I will say, like we said earlier, if you're a drone manufacturer and you want us to put your drone through the paces, we are happy to do it.
Or care about our input.
Yeah, and if you want us to review it, we'll consider that. If you want us to, you just want to hear our opinions offline, we're happy to do that as well. Anyway, I just want to say thank you to all our listeners. Thank you, Alan.
No, thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks for your kudos.
Thank you. Okay.
No, thank you.
And you guys, please keep reaching out. You know, we love to find new topics and be able to address what the community at large, you know, the questions that you guys have. It really, it helps us a lot, so.
Great. All right. Take care, folks.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.